Let's keep on caring. Let's keep on sharing with
Bill Jenkins.
It's Saturday night, and for the next 3 hours, we're here to expand you. We're here to talk about the frontiers of your life. We're here to talk about some things that will be a part of your life. Mind-boggling, and to most of you, unreal. But they are real. You want to come along? Our guest tonight, John C. Bedini. Who's John Bedini? He'll be a very important man in your life. Also with him is Stephen Wirth. Who's Stephen Wirth? Well, he is with John Bedini. I call them the Technobrats. A little bit later, joining us will be Thomas E. Bearden. Now, these men all have something in common, and that is you. But more importantly, I'm looking at something here right now. I am looking at a free energy machine. It's just sitting there, going on its own, and it is creating energy. That's just one of them. And there is another one. Now, these are laboratory experimental devices. They'll be in a museum someplace, I suppose. But you will have one in your house that is providing you with all of the energy you can ever use. You will be disconnected from the Department of Water and Power of Southern California Edison. You won't need them anymore because of these men who are going to be on the show with us tonight. John, welcome to Open Mind, and thank you for coming down.
Well, thank you, Bill. I just have to say that it's been a real pleasure to be on this show with you. And I'm here tonight to open everybody's mind.
Well, I appreciate that. And the guy with you there?
Oh, yeah.
This is the mystical magician when it comes to taking an idea and making it into a piece of hardware.
Mm-hmm. One of the best men in the field that I've found.
He argues with you a lot.
Well, he argues with me, but a lot of times he's right.
He understands what a gravity field is, what a stress scalar wave is, and he understands a lot of these things that they don't understand at Caltech and UCLA and TRW and all of these other.
Well, more than that, it's to have somebody who can visualize this machine in his mind and then put the mechanical part of it together. The electronics is nothing.
There is this huge machine that he has in his shop.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's bigger than that whale that was in the Sacramento River.
That's right. That's under construction.
And he programs its little computer. It's a big computer. I guess you could go to the moon with that computer that's on that machine. And then it comes out with this intricate little piece of machinery. You know, in goes a bunch of stuff, and out comes this magnificent thing. You two work together like the Bobbsey twins.
All ground out parts.
Yeah.
Within 1/10, usually, on all the tolerances.
John, we have talked here in the last year. I think your first show with me was in September of last year, September 17th, I
think. Mm-hmm.
Free energy. I am looking at it right here in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
What is that thing? You know, what looks like it was made by my grandson in the backyard. It's a bunch of sticks and some little wires all stuck together.
That's true. This particular machine here is what I call the pendulum-type generator. And this type of machine can gather power in the middle of the night, and it can also lose power during the days. But it can never run down. Its output is always more than what its input is, because there's a very special little motor there driving that machine.
Well, you talk about a special little motor. Let me describe it. It looks like a spool of thread.
That's right.
Period.
That's right.
There's a little magnet in it.
No, there's no magnet in it.
There's not a magnet in it? There's something
in
it.
No, it's a solid piece of iron, and this is triggered on by this pendulum, and it only requires thousands of an amp to give it a push instead of volts, as we're used to.
Now, on the other side of the swing of the pendulum, on both sides, you have some coils there. On the bottom of the pendulum itself is a little magnet that looks like a horseshoe thing. Can we go out and play horseshoes
that's,
with
that? That's right. It's one monopole magnet, and we could stop this, and you can have a better look at it. You can see it's one pole.
Oh, you've changed the magnet.
That's right.
The
because
last time,
we
yeah.
found out that by having a monopole generator in free energy situations, the efficiency is much higher.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so if we start this monopole generator, and you can hear it click away,
mm-hmm.
okay, what happens is it has to pass two output coils, which are conventional generating coils. That pulse is then returned back to the battery while the motor is off. But the motor, remember, is drawing thousandths of a watt.
Okay.
So this whole instrument is running on less than 1 watt of power here in the studio.
And how much is it producing?
It is producing 24 watts of output power.
All right. Now, we have a motor, or we have a pendulum,
mm-hmm.
that's running on less than a watt.
That's right.
And it's producing 24 watts.
That's right, Bill. And you see,
where is it getting the energy?
Okay. Now, we're going to go a little bit into that. The energy is derived because of the motor's efficiency, number one. And number two, the earth adds to that. You see, in all our textbooks, we've been taught that the pendulum is one instrument which will measure the earth's spin.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, as the earth spins on axis, the pendulum would change direction. In that direction, since we don't have a way for this pendulum to change direction, what we do is aid the pendulum in movement back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as the earth turns. So at certain hours of the night, that pendulum will go up to 90 degrees, which means the output power is increasing even more. The earth adds to it.
Now, if we were to put meters on those few wires that you have there, would we be able to see that output?
No, because let me explain to you what the problem is in conventional meters. First of all, they do not detect spikes. In other words, they do not detect the spikes, and the meter cannot read instantaneously that peak, not even a true RMS meter. Okay?
All right.
So what we have here is a generator that... That will produce output power no matter what the situation is.
Well, are you saying then that we're creating a kind of energy here that it is difficult, if not impossible, for most of the conventional instrumentality to read?
Yes, Bill. That's exactly what we're saying. The meters which we have today do not respond fast enough to this current spike.
Well, I don't want you to sell snake oil here. If I can't check that, how can I trust what you're telling me?
You can check that by putting a meter on the battery,
mm-hmm.
which will tell you that the battery's not going downward.
Well, I should probably describe this pendulum here. It's three sticks that are kind of built up in a pyramid with a pendulum now on it going back and forth. It's driving me crazy, but it's going to do that. Right?
All right.
It's going to do that all night long.
Bill, let's...
And you have a battery pack that is... hooked into what you call the motor, which looks like a spool to me.
Bill, I brought another instrument with me, which I'm going to set up right at this time.
Okay.
And I'm going to let you see for yourself exactly what's going to happen. And
right.
This is something that's based upon this principle. And I do want you to see this thing, and I'm going to throw it into the charge condition where I'm going to send these spikes back to the battery. And if that's true, the wheel should speed up.
It will speed up. And while you're doing that, we will be finding Tom Bearden, who is somewhere. Michael Kelly, who has one of our engineers here who doesn't believe all of this. Michael, come on in. I want you to look at these devices. Now, I've been talking to the engineers here at KABC, and these guys all know their electronics very well. They keep ours shining and going all of the time. What we do is... a violation of a lot of their physical laws and properties that they work by. So the engineers here are very interested. So, Michael, you're a part of the show.
Michael, come here just for a second. I want you to see something as an engineer, okay?
Now, this is... he didn't know he was going to do this.
Here's a compass. I want you to check out that wheel and tell me that there's a north... don't start the wheel. Just check the polarity of what those magnets are. And make sure that there's not one in the wheel that's not indifferent. Okay, they're all the same polarity, right?
Let me turn on that microphone over there, Mike, so you can get on, because you're a guest on the show, so you don't have to worry about your...
Okay, Mike, what I'm going to do...
They're all consistent.
...is I'm going to hook up this battery, okay? And these two are generator outputs, okay? And what I want to do is I want to hook up this battery. If you wish to get a meter, you're more than welcome to do that. I'm going to hook up the battery... Here's the positive.
Here's the negative.
Now, notice that there's no movement in the device whatsoever, but you have all the pulse. So what we do with this type of energy device is if we want full power out without drawing anything out of the battery whatsoever, we have a little light that's equivalent to what the wattage draw of this particular motor is. Do you also notice that there's only one pole on this motor? Is that correct?
And that's what it appears to be, anyway. Sure.
Okay. Now, what I want you to do is put this switch down in the start position. Just push the switch down. Okay, and give this a spin towards you. Now, this is at a constant current. If you had a meter on there right now, it would be at a constant current, okay? Now, what I want you to do is put this into the charge position, push the switch up, and if this speeds up, it must mean that the battery is getting more energy. Go ahead.
A slight increase there, yeah.
Well, let it go.
And getting faster.
And getting faster.
So we'll just continue to let that device run, Bill.
All right. It's a monopole.
About 4 hours.
Okay.
Michael Kelly, engineer. Is that defining?
Is it speeding up?
Your idea of what energy should do?
Well, I'm the wrong guy to really be asking about all this, Bill. But it appears to be
now,
as simple as it looks.
Let's take some energy working from that, okay?
We have an impromptu demonstration going on.
I have a little bulb here that's a number 47 bulb, which is equivalent. By the way, this motor right here is running on about 0.128 milliamps. And see, it has plenty of torque here.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to do is take it out of the charge condition because I want to supply power now somewhere else without any drain here. Okay? So I take it out and I supply my power to where I want. That meanwhile, that keeps running. Now, if you put this switch back into the charge condition, I will send it back to the battery.
Interesting.
And it will speed back up.
Just amazing, Bill.
I have to apologize to Mike Kelly, who is our engineer here tonight, who keeps us going. He did not know that he was going to have to come in here and look at some electronics.
There's a very unique thing there. That motor is being driven by all the same type of poles.
And not only that, it's spinning a 7-pound weight.
Pretty good,
yeah, it's pulling 7 pounds worth of mass for less than 1 watt of input power. And still speeding up.
Mike's eyes are as big as a saucer over there.
It's okay.
I'm convinced on this part of it. Anyway.
You're convinced there, are you?
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Well, guys, I want you to put on your earphones because we have another guy on the phone here. Mr. Thomas E. Bearden, who is one of the more advanced theoretical physicists in the world. Tom, welcome aboard.
Hello, Bill. Nice to be back with you.
Where do we find you tonight?
Well, I'm sitting someplace in Dallas, Texas.
Dallas?
I'm not sure just exactly where, but I'm sitting someplace in Dallas, Texas.
Well, we're sitting at a studio in Los Angeles. We've got free energy devices going crazy here in front of us. And, of course, your friend and mine, John Bedini and Steve Worth, are here.
Oh, boy.
The technobrats have descended upon us in full measure.
If you've got those two guys loose again, no telling what's happening.
Well, they drove me down here tonight. We got here in 20 minutes. I don't know whether we went through some sort of a time frame or whatever, but with those two, anything can happen. Have we got free energy, Tom?
I have not been able to see that device. I was listening very intently there. I just came on the line a while back, and I was listening to the description there as if they were winding it up. As best I understand what you've got, with all the poles the same polarity, I would say you've got a very good chance of having it right there. It's got to be it.
Well, we have two different ones. We have this a rector set-looking pendulum that is not about to stop swinging.
Yes.
And I have seen it swing for hours, in fact. It will drive you crazy with that little plump, plump, plump that it does. But it never stops. And, well, it does stop if you stop it. Well, no, it's not stopping there. Well, it's on the motor right now, so it's kind of wiggling on top of the little motor that's in the middle.
Yeah, well, as I understand, you were taking some energy out, too, at least occasionally there.
Yeah.
So, of course, that's the criterion. If you throw energy out of the system and you keep going, sooner or later you've got to say that you've gotten that energy from a new kind of source, that it's not the conventional sources that are going on. When we say free energy, you know, we really mean that there is some hidden sources. There are some hidden sources in the vacuum. They're like hidden rivers that can be tapped. Normal motors and normal generators do not tap them, but it is possible to build motors and generators that do.
Well,
and we're saying that you build a special paddle wheel, and you build a special river. You have to make the river. You make the dam for the river, so to speak. And once the dam is made and the river's flowing, you have to furnish just a tiny bit of energy to maintain the dam, but you don't have to build it again from scratch. And then you have to have a special paddle wheel that'll go in the flow and take that and turn that into shaft power. When you do that, what you've really done is in terms of relativity, you've bent space-time, and you're using gravitational field energy, and that's exactly what it sounds like you're doing right there.
Well, this is a form of gravity engineering we're looking at.
See, all energy, in the extended sense, all fields come from or are directly associated with the curving of space-time. You might say gravitational energy in the general or extended sense. And so all the other energy comes from that as some subset of that. And that really, if you talk about a more obscure kind of energy, you just build a more obscure kind of gravitational field in the theory. And so we can boil it all down to say there's one master kind of field source or energy source, and for want of a better term, we call that gravitational field, because there are many, many things that warp space-time. It's not just a single field. It's a conglomeration of a whole bunch of things. And that's what we call gravitational field. And if you get one part or two parts or all of that working, yes, when you warp space-time locally, you've done something that our textbooks have assumed you can't do. And if you do warp space-time locally, we already rigorously know that you can violate conservation of energy locally, where you're at. We're not saying for the whole universe. We're saying where you are. Just like if you stick a paddle wheel in a river, if you only consider the paddle wheel, don't consider the river, you seem to have violated conservation of energy. Of course, there's a source there. In this case, you've created a more subtle source and a more subtle paddle wheel, but it's really at base root level. It's no more complicated than putting a paddle wheel in a river. It's complicated in being able to do it and to think those new thoughts. But in principle, it's the same principle as a paddle wheel in a river.
Well, what we're trying to say, Tom, it seems to me, when we say the term free energy, you know, we can look at John Bedini's devices, these things that he and Stephen Wirth have made, and they are many and varied. There are a number of them now.
Yes.
That we no longer have to burn fossil fuel to get energy.
That's true.
We no longer have to build dams to back up rivers to get water to turn turbines, which will power generators.
That's correct.
That is a thing of the past. That we can build machines now that will sit on this table here at KABC that will provide you with energy. And there is no pollution going into the air. We're not spending a dime for oil. We can have it in our home.
That's true. And let me make a comment on, in general on this to clarify some things. When Einstein wrote the theory of general relativity, when he first wrote it, the only thing they knew that would actually bend or warp space-time very much was a huge collection of mass, something like a sun or a star. And so they assumed that there'd never be any kind of way that you could bend space-time locally enough to make any difference or to even measure or detect hardly. So he made an assumption when he developed the theory that locally you would never have general relativity at all. Instead, locally, it would be special relativity. In other words, in special relativity, all your conservation laws are upheld. You have conservation of energy rigorously. You have conservation of charge, conservation of momentum, and so forth. And so what is written in the ordinary theory of general relativity, as it's taught in all the universities today, is a highly restricted form of the true general relativity. It assumes that there's not much disturbance at all where we are, and all the disturbance that we call curvature of space-time is way over yonder somewhere, over by the sun, over by a star, a black hole, or something like that. But that locally, where the instrument is and the laboratory is, there's not anything going on extraordinary, and all the conservation laws are upheld there. In other words, we assume that. And for those people out there who are technical, if you'll please read the book by Misner, Wheeler, and Thorne, Gravitation, which is one of the best textbooks in the country in this area, you will find that they did a very good job of telling you what the assumptions in the restricted general relativity that's taught in the universities are. And so if you want to know what those assumptions are, don't take my word for it. Go check it in that book. They made a very good job of listing all of them. Now, what we are saying is, as far as it goes, that's true. But we're saying that in the scalar electromagnetics approach, what we're really doing is electrogravitation. We are turning the energy of the electromagnetic field into gravitational field locally, right there where the instrument is. And we're doing it enough to get a local curvature of space-time. Now, what we're saying is we violate the assumption that was placed on general relativity in the first place and has been upheld ever since then, just passed along and assumed. But we do not violate in any shape, form, or fashion the unrestricted general relativity. If you remove that assumption from the textbook, then the textbook already verifies you can do what John and the other inventors like John are saying they have done, and in fact, in some cases, that I have seen that they have done.
We're looking at them here tonight.
That's correct. What I'm saying is that there is a good, solid, theoretical basis for what is being done here already in physics. You don't have to take my word for it. Go into the physics book, change that assumption, and see what comes out. And when you do, you'll find out that, yes, indeed, if you have a curvature locally of space-time that is of any significance, you can extract free energy. And you do not have to conserve charge, and you do not have to conserve momentum. So I want to make one thing very clear. A law of physics, a law of nature, so to speak, is not cast in concrete. It is something that's a beautiful principle for a broad range of phenomena under very general assumptions. And almost all the time, those assumptions are upheld. But if you violate deliberately one or more of those basic assumptions that law assumes for it to be a law, then you can get around that law. And the problem in physics is when we make it dogma, not science. When we use the term a law of nature as if we had said an immutable law of God. You know, the rate of flow of time in physics used to be called immutable.
Yeah.
And before Einstein wrote relativity, it was unthinkable that the rate of flow of time itself could be changed. Now, today, we know it can be changed. And yet, even though we know you can alter the flow of time, you can certainly slow it down and then speed it back up and then slow it down and speed it back up, and that is an alternation, that is a wave, we don't really want to believe that you can make time wave.
Well, you know, Tom, we're looking at devices here which defy the second law of thermodynamics.
That's correct, because if you have an unbent space-time, if you have a Lorentz frame, then you're going to obey those laws. They are based on the assumption that you don't have a local curvature of space-time. And I assure you that if you do not get such a bending of space-time locally, you will not get what we're calling free energy. The universe will demand back from you everything that it gave you.
That's right.
Now, if you bend space-time, you have a river that's flowing through the universe, just like the ordinary physical river flows by your door or by a city. It's a more subtle river, but it is a real river, and general relativity, the standard textbooks of general relativity, verify that there is such a river there in that case. It's already in a theory. It's not Tom Bearden.
So the trick is to get your paddle in that river.
Well, the trick is it's a subtle river, so it demands a new kind of paddle wheel. The conventional thinking for the way we normally build paddle wheels, we don't get it, because that conventional theory of how to build paddle wheels has all been based on the idea that the frame wasn't bent in the first place.
Well, I'm looking at some strange paddle wheels here tonight, right here in this studio.
That's correct. And that's exactly what John has been doing. The things that I've looked at and gone over and that have given me such great delight, he has worked out ways in which he does exactly that. And we can show conclusively that when you take electromagnetics and make it fight itself to a standstill, what we call a vector zero, it becomes stress of vacuum, stress energy of vacuum, and rigorously in the theory, when you vary that, because you still got each of the handles that's fighting, and you can increase or decrease them, you can make waves, you have no external electromagnetic field, but you have just made an oscillating gravitational field. And it's interesting to see that the universities, and even the basic axiom in vector analysis, have ignored the real consequences of making such electromagnetic zeros. No university in the country, not a single one, has done any series of experiments with materials, and their responses to such vector zeros in electromagnetics. Not a single one. I think I'd lay out a challenge for anybody to produce a paper by a physicist in all the schools, and I'd make one single exception of Hooper. He didn't call it this, but he did this, where they actually looked at this kind of a problem. It has not been done. I've asked the heads of quite a few physics departments if they've ever seen such a series of experiments in their life, or if any of their colleagues have ever done anything like that, or any of their graduate students, and I have yet to get a yes answer to any of that. It's always been a no.
They don't want to play with it, it sounds like.
Well, what I'm urging is, it isn't that hard to do that kind of experiment. And if somebody points out to you, hey, here's a beautiful thing that vector analysis tells us we can easily do. The first thing we learn to do in vectors is add in some vectors to zero. And it doesn't seem like anybody's ever investigated what you get with electromagnetics when you do that. It seems that a true scientist who's curious about the behavior of nature and wants to work that out couldn't help but jump in there and do some experiments in that area to find out what happens.
I think it's very, it's some sort of a commentary, Tom, on the way we are right now. And here are these two young men, very bright, that work in surroundings that would be, well, you've seen them and I've seen them, it looks like a little bicycle shop somewhere, that they are producing free energy.
That's correct.
And they don't have the great gleaming laboratories and all of the things that Caltech could offer them, or UCLA or USC or TRW or McDonnell Douglas or all the great aerospace firms here, because those people will not listen. So they have to do it in their back shops under the most adverse circumstances and at great cost to them personally. But they nevertheless are doing it. And we're looking at them, and it's here. And we want to talk about this because what these men are doing back there in their little back rooms will soon free you of energy cost ever again.
Well, as you know, Bill, in my opinion, it has not been accidental. This business of pounding always on the table scientifically and mouthing off about the laws of nature as if it were dogma, and I'm not talking about, there's nothing wrong with the law of nature as long as you recognize it can be defeated.
Well, the law of nature is just that.
With the idea that it can never be changed under any circumstance, that is not science, that is dogma. That assumes we have perfect models, and of course we do not.
Well, it's a term we use here on the show quite often when we get on this subject, is we look at the second law of thermodynamics. We know that that is not true anymore. The law of conservation of energy, we know that's not true anymore. But it's as if those laws were fingered by the finger of God on stone on Mount Sinai and brought down by Moses. That our scientific community deals with those laws. The fact of the matter is that those laws are not laws.
Yes, the real problem we have in science is that so many people are always trying to make it dogma and not science. For example, let me give you some specific examples.
Could you wait on those specific examples for a second?
Sure.
Because I have a specific thing I got to do here, Tom.
Right.
I'm speaking with Tom Bearden, who's on the conference line with us from Dallas, Texas tonight. In studio with me is John C. Bedini and Stephen Wirth, and also our devices that produce more energy than they use. One of the finest theoretical physicists in the world who has become enmeshed in and fascinated by the work of the two gentlemen that are in studio with me, John C. Bedini and Stephen Wirth. We're talking about free energy. I'd like for both of you men, if you don't mind, let's take a little time out because we have a dear, dear friend of Open Mind on the show, the president of the Southern California Society of Psychical Research, Dr. Elizabeth McAdams. Liz, how are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. How are you, Bill?
I'm just doing fine. What's
great
on your mind?
Well, I am having such a wonderful time, Bill, in Washington, D.C., representing the International Foundation for Survival Research at the perhaps the most historic conference, Bill, in the last 100 years for survival after death.
Mm-hmm.
We have Senator Claiborne Pell of Rhode Island as one of the conveners of a major conference being held at Georgetown University talking about, does the consciousness survive death?
Does it?
Absolutely, as far as I'm concerned, based on the evidence. And, of course, as you and I have discussed on the show, there always needs to be more research. But Senator Pell and others, and actually astronaut Edgar Mitchell's organization, have put together this excellent conference. And I'm just very, very pleased to see that senators and congressmen are so interested in this subject.
They're beginning to find out about the intelligence of the spirit there.
Absolutely. And Senator and Mrs. Albert Gore, Jr. of Tennessee are giving a luncheon this coming Monday for the International Foundation for Survival Research. And Senator Pell says that he's going to be able to come to Los Angeles in the next few months to receive the foundation's Distinctive Achievement Award to be given to him.
Well, we certainly want to tip our hats to all of them, Liz, for their work.
Absolutely.
You know, we've struggled long and hard to get serious attention paid to these things that a lot of people may think are rather mystic, but I know of nothing more mystic than conventional religions, if you want to get down to it.
And Bill, your show, Open Mind, has done so much in all of Southern California and throughout the country to bring attention to this through the years, and so people are finally listening to it and doing something about it at the Senate level, it seems.
So now it's getting into the Senate.
Absolutely.
Well, it's gratifying to me, being a constitutionalist as I am, that the Senate is responding to the will of the people.
Absolutely.
It's about time that they listen to the people. If they would listen to them on some other things, they may solve all the problems they got out there.
Well, you know, it's very gratifying because Senator Pell of Rhode Island and Bishop John Spong of Newark and others stood up in front of 750 people. This beautiful Gaston Hall was totally packed and said that, for example, Senator Pell said today that he thinks the entire human race stands a chance of making it without killing each other with a nuclear arms race if we can just be convinced once and for all from science that our consciousness survives death, despite whatever religious belief we might or might not have, that additionally, knowing of the research from science, he thinks will do a great deal for the human race.
Well, you know, Senator Pell is right, Liz, that the key to our future is in science.
Yes.
And, of course, we're discussing that here right now.
You've got a wonderful show going. I was having fun listening.
And the science that these gentlemen are talking about that are with us tonight,
yes,
is the science that renders a nuclear bomb neuter.
Well, I certainly congratulate you, Bill, on another exciting show, as always.
Well, thank you.
And you take care, and if anybody would like to call the Foundation for a free booklet there in Southern California that would summarize survival after death research, all they have to do is call 213-857-5604, and your office has that, and the staff will send them a free booklet.
Right, that's the Southern California Society for Psychical Research. I'm happy to be a part of it. Liz is the president of it. You've done just monumental work, I think, in this area, giving a great deal of credence and respectability to what a lot of people might look upon as a gray area. You've made it a real area. You've now got it into the halls of Congress.